You are listening to the Mid-Current Church Podcast. Today's message is week 3 of our series, Bystander, a view of the cross from those who were there. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. And now, here is Pastor Sten Carlson with today's message.
My wife Erica and I, we love as often as we can to engage our kids in conversation around the dinner table or really any time that's appropriate. And we love to ask a few, you know, various types of questions. For example, we love to engage in conversation with questions like this. We'll ask them, what was the best part of your day? Or we'll ask them, what is your favorite memory from the last year? We'll ask them, you know, if you could relive one moment from our most recent vacation, what would it be? Or if you could eat only one food or one dessert or one snack for the rest of your life, what would you choose? And if there's one thing that we have learned over the past couple years about our oldest daughter, Lucy, it's that she cannot answer these kinds of questions. Right? She absolutely hates having, and she doesn't really, but she hates having to choose between, you know, like two or three or four good things or a number of good choices. And by now, she knows that when we're hanging out together as a family, she knows these questions are coming. And as soon as Eric and I begin to ask one, you can see, you know, her shoulders kind of slump and her cheeks begin to blush and she smiles and she says, you know, I don't know. I can't choose all of it, everything, you know, all of it. She cannot pick one. She can't do it. She cannot make up her mind about whatever it is that we are asking of her. And as much as we kind of laugh and as much as we kind of tease her about it, I have to admit that I think she gets it from us, from me and my wife, Erica. We have often been accused of or, you know, oftentimes of just self-diagnosed ourselves with a pretty severe case of indecision, okay? We often struggle to make up our own minds. Oftentimes, here's what we've discovered. Here's what I've discovered. Oftentimes, our indecision, it becomes our decision. For example, we'll be deciding whether or not to, you know, go out for dinner or to make something at home for dinner. And, you know, neither of us can or is willing to be the one to make the decision. And eventually time passes and soon time is running out, quite frankly. And without a whole lot of discussion, neither of us actually made a decision or even talked about it. But all of a sudden, without a whole lot of discussion, the decision is made for us, right? It's now too late to go out. We've now missed our window to make something, you know, substantial for dinner or to go grocery shopping if we needed. And quite honestly, we have most likely just passed the time by eating a snack here and then eating a snack there. And so by the time the dinner rolls around anyway, we don't even really want dinner. We both look at each other. We're like, I'm not even that hungry anymore. Are you? We're like, no, me neither. And so we don't do anything. And we didn't even have to talk about it. Indecision made the decision for us. Or, you know, just again, for example, we'll be deciding perhaps how to, you know, spend our evening after the kids go to bed. And we'll be deciding between, you know, playing a game or you know, catching up on a show or, you know, catching up with each other at our favorite little hangout spot in the house. And far too often, we don't make up our minds about anything. We think about maybe watching a show, and so what happens usually is researching a show online turns into scrolling online on our phones and turns into, you know, me checking scores on ESPN, and it turns into Erica's favorite pastime, which is looking up houses on Zillow that we could never, ever afford, okay? And soon, all of a sudden, time goes by, and soon we look up at each other. We're kind of I'm ready for bed. Are you? We're like, yeah, I'm kind of tired. And once again, right? We didn't have to discuss it. Nobody made a decision, but once again, indecision made the decision for us. And at least for me, I can't speak for Erica. At least for me, this is true in other areas of my life. I gotta be honest. And I started to wonder, if that's the case for me, I started to wonder if any of you ever feel the same way. I wondered how many of you are plagued by indecision. I wonder, you know, what areas of your life are potentially impacted by, you know, just kind of how neutral or how indifferent you are about certain decisions that you may be confronted with. Now, I'll be real honest. I'm actually not really concerned about how indecision, you know, affects what you eat for dinner, or you know, what you watch online, or how well you can, you know, pick your favorite vacation spot, or you know, the best part of your day. But I will admit that I do get a little curious about how indecision affects your heart, and how indecision and how indifference affects ultimately your attitude towards Jesus and your response to Him. In fact, if you were to ask me, I would say that I think one of the greatest threats to American Christianity, it's probably not what you're thinking, but I'd say one of the greatest threats, in my opinion, to American Christianity is ultimately neutrality, indifference. It's just indecision, right? It's our inability, or oftentimes it's just our you know, our disinterest in actually making a decision. When it comes to faith, or when it comes to spirituality, or when it comes to Jesus, right? The truth is, we all live in fairly well-controlled bubbles where we really rarely have to make up our mind when it comes to Jesus. We just don't have to. And I think, right, when that is our response, indifference and indecision, I think the results can be damaging. And one of the best examples, or in many ways, I suppose you could say one of the worst examples of this, is demonstrated by the role that indecision played in Jesus' death on the cross. And that's what I want to explore today in our series that you have heard about called Bystander. If this is first time jumping in with us or joining us, let me tell you a little bit about what this series Bystander is all about. The truth is, the story of Jesus' death, it cuts and weaves and it bobs and weaves through a wide variety of men and women who were either gathered at the cross or who found themselves along the pathway that led Jesus to the cross. And despite the part that they played, or their role in the ancient world, ultimately what we see is that these are people who are not a whole lot different than you and me. They're really not. And as we examine more of their stories, what we find is that they actually open up for us kind of new sight lines and new angles of vision on the cross and of Jesus. And so as we journey toward Easter, we want to take a look at Jesus, and we want to take a look at the cross through their eyes and through their experience to see what lessons that we learn from the people who were there. And so today, we're going to discuss, and I'm going to talk about a man who history and who some New Testament scholars consider to be the man who could not make up his mind. He's a man that is referred to as Pontius Pilate. And if you're at all familiar with the story of Jesus' death on a cross, you may recognize the name Pontius Pilate. You may recognize Pilate as the man who sentenced Jesus to that death on the cross. But interestingly enough, it wasn't Pilate's hate for Jesus that led him to this decision. It wasn't his kind of like disgust for Jesus that led him to this death sentence. It was his indecision. It was his indifference about Jesus that ultimately sealed Jesus' fate. And so I want to read about that moment with all of you today. What we're going to do is we're going to turn to the New Testament book of Luke to see how it is that Luke recorded these very events. Before we get there, I'll get you up to speed and remind you that just prior to what we're going to read, Jesus has just been betrayed by his own disciple Judas, and he's been arrested by Roman soldiers, and so eventually he is brought before Pilate. Pilate is the governor of the Roman territory of Judea. The truth is, Romans were, they kind of ruled the, you know, they kind of ruled the land. Rome was very happy to let Jews settle their own disputes and their own squabbles among their people and among their religious leaders. But those Jews and those leaders, they were not permitted to sentence anyone to death or to execute any kind of death sentence. And so these religious leaders, who, by the way, were the leaders who were, they were the ones that were like threatened, you know, by Jesus and you know, the claims that he was making to be king and the attention that he was getting of everyone around him. These Jewish leaders, that they're threatened, they knew that if they wanted Jesus executed, which they kind of did, that he was a huge threat to them. If they wanted him executed, they knew that they would have to get Rome, or they have to get Pilate in particular, to hand down the orders. They knew that they would have to get Pilate to hand down the death sentence. And so that is essentially where we pick up here in Luke chapter 23. You can follow along with me on the side screens. Here's what it says. The entire council, this is the, you know, all the religious leaders, the entire council took Jesus to Pilate, the Roman governor, and they began to stay their case. This man has been leading our people astray, right? They didn't like the fact that, you know, that the people were kind of captivated with Jesus and that they were all getting knocked down a few pegs on the religious totem pole. They say he's leading our people astray by telling them not to pay their taxes to the Roman government, which isn't true. Jesus never told them to do that. He's leading them astray by doing that and by claiming that he is the Messiah, a king. That is true. He was claiming to do that. Here's verse 3. So Pilate asked him to Jesus. He said to Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And Jesus replied, "You have said it." Right? This was his kind of like, "You said it, I didn't," kind of moment. He's going like, "If you say so." As far as Pilate was concerned in response, this is the kind of stuff that he isn't really overly concerned about, nor is Rome for that matter. These kind of like these Jewish squabbles, right? This was stuff for Jewish leaders to deal with on their own. And so here's how Pilate responds. Verse 4, Pilate turned to the leading priests and to the crowd, and he said, "I find nothing wrong with this man." In a way, he's sympathetic toward Jesus. He tells the crowd, "I think the dude is innocent. There's no way I can send this guy to die." But the crowd, man, the council that Jesus or that Pilate's addressing, they flip a lid. They're like, no. This dude is a problem. Like they're yelling, "Crucify him!" And then they tell Pilate, "Either you got to do something about this." They're saying this guy is stirring up all kinds of trouble all over Galilee. And when Pilate hears that Jesus is from Galilee, he's like, "Wait, Galilee? This is good news for Pilate." He's going like, "Oh, if he's from Galilee, we're in good shape then. That's Herod's domain. He's Herod's problem. Herod is the king of the Jews in Galilee." So Pilate's going like, "Yeah, send him to Herod. Let Herod decide." Right? Pilate doesn't want to make the decision, so he's happy to pass the decision off to someone else. This is the equivalent, if I was just going to paint a little picture for you here, this is like the equivalent of my kids coming to me with some requests and then me being like, "Go ask your mom." Right? I'm like, I don't want to make the decision, right? Like, ultimately, I don't really care if you eat another cheese stick, but I don't want to be the one that said so. I'm like, yeah, go talk to mom. Sorry, Erica. You know? I just don't want to be the one that made the decision, so I try to pass it off on someone else. So this is what happens, right? They drag Jesus to Herod. And Luke writes that Herod was actually kind of excited to see Jesus, think he might see Jesus, you know, do one of these miracles that people have been talking about, but Jesus kind of stays silent in front of Herod. I mean, he's kind of going like, "Y'all have already made up your mind, so I'm not really going to say much more." So he's silent. And ultimately, Herod then, he has no grounds to charge him with anything either. And so Herod sends him back to Pilate. This is the equivalent, if I was just going to paint a little picture here for you, this is like the equivalent of me sending my kids to ask mom and then them coming back to me saying, "Mom told us to ask you." And it's like, dang it, I didn't want to make the decision, so I took, right? It's like nobody wants to be the one to decide. This is what's happening here with Pilate and Herod. And now that the decision truly rests on Pilate, He knows that he's the one that's got to make up his mind. He comes to the same conclusion. Look what he says if we skip down to verses 14 and 15. Pilate says, I have examined him thoroughly on this point in your presence, and I find him innocent. He says, Herod came to the same conclusion, and he sent him back to us. Nothing this man has done calls for the death penalty. He says, there's nothing I can do here. But the crowd is adamant. They wouldn't take no for an answer. Verse 20 says that Pilate, he even tries to release Jesus. And he appeals to them once again, but they were insistent. He tried a third time to reason with them, but they would not stand down. And so skip down to verse 23, and it says this, but with loud shouts, they insistently demanded that he be crucified. And their shouts prevailed. Pilate's got no issue. Sympathetic in a way. Captivated slightly by this man and who he is, tries to release him, but the crowd wouldn't listen. They demanded that he be crucified, and it says their shouts prevailed. And so Pilate decided to grant their demand. He released the man who had been thrown into prison for insurrection and murder, the one they asked for, and surrendered Jesus to their will. Essentially, right? Despite his conclusion, dude's done nothing wrong. Essentially, Pilate stands aside and lets others decide for him. Right? It's a subtle and maybe even an unintentional form of rejection, but it is rejection nonetheless. Right, Pilate doesn't show any malice, any hate, any disgust towards Jesus. Neither is Herod, for that matter. But neither chooses to defend him or to stand with him either. Something tells them that he's not guilty of any crime, but apparently he is not really to be believed or defended either. Pilate's attitude towards Jesus, it does show him a little respect, yet in the end, he fails to respond to Jesus as Jesus truly deserved. And I think Luke, right, who thought all of this was worth mentioning so much that he wrote it all down, I think Luke is indirectly calling on us as readers of this story today. He's calling on you and on me today to choose sides, to make up our mind, right? He depicts a number of different attitudes and responses to Jesus, but based on the sentence that is soon passed down, it's clear that any failure to truly embrace Jesus, whether it's outright rejection or whether it's just kind of passive indifference, it's clear that Luke is saying it is not commendable. It is not recommended, right? Pilate doesn't go down very favorably in the history books. And so if I had to sum up the lesson that Pilate teaches us, right? We learn a good lesson from a bad example. If I had to sum up the good lesson that Pilate teaches us regarding our attitude towards Jesus, it's this, right? When it comes to our response to Jesus, indecision is deadly. Pilate's indecision, his indifference, his kind of neutrality ultimately landed Jesus on the cross. And it's fascinating to me to think about it all, right? Pilate this is not what he wanted. This was not his goal. I mean, he didn't ask for Jesus even to get dumped onto his lap. He wasn't looking to pick a fight. He wasn't looking to get involved in these kind of affairs of the Jewish people. He wasn't looking to make some kind of statement He didn't invite this kind of spiritual make up your mind moment, but ready or not, that's exactly where he found himself. He very well may have wished that this whole thing never, you know, made it onto his to-do list for the day, but nonetheless, this is where he finds himself. He might not have asked for it, but it came and found him. And when I think about it, I can't help but wonder. I can't help but ask myself, are we not sometimes, you and I, are we not sometimes a lot like Pilate in our response to Jesus? For one reason or another, we find ourselves confronted with maybe unwanted, unlooked for, or even unwelcomed encounters with Jesus, right? I don't know. Maybe maybe your wife dragged you to church. Maybe your in-laws, you know, keep bringing up spiritual conversations. Maybe your neighbor, your coworkers keep asking how they can pray for you. Maybe some pastor shows up on the basketball court and you're going like, oh man. One way or another, maybe we all do at times. Maybe you find yourselves face to face with Jesus. And I don't know, maybe in whatever kind of confrontation happens, even if you weren't looking for it, even if you didn't ask for it, right? When it happened, however it happened, maybe you're intrigued by what you hear, by what you see, by what you experience. Maybe you find there to be something different about this guy, Jesus. Maybe you find there's something different about those who really do follow him. You can't quite put your finger on it, but maybe you're going, I don't know, something seems legit. You might even feel, even if you weren't looking for it or weren't expecting it or never would have imagined it for yourself, you might even feel the pull. You feel the invitation on your life. You feel the invitation on your energy or on your time or on your loyalties in your life. There's something. You never would have guessed it, but there's something inside you that feels like he's tapping you on the shoulder. He's trying to get your attention. He's trying to call you to something. But then you count the cost. You add it all up. You count the cost of taking a stand with him, and you determine, I think this is what happens to all of us. You determine the cost is too high. It's too inconvenient. It's too uncomfortable. It's too complicated. And perhaps all the other voices out there are simply too loud. And so what happens? The louder voices prevail. Rather than reject Jesus outright, because remember, you don't have any particular animosity. You're not like, you're not trying to like take the guy down, but rather than reject him outright, right? You just try to defer the moment, right? Try, look the other way, try to put the moment on ice, dodge the decision, or kind of proceed as neutral as you can. But here's the reality, folks, that we see in this story. Here's the reality of trying to dodge the moment, to proceed as neutral or as indifferent as you can. It didn't work for Pilate. And it won't work for us either, right? We can't let others decide for us. We can't always let the louder voices prevail. Right? Indecision, when it comes to our heart and our response and our attitude towards Jesus, however it is that he comes into our view, indecision is deadly. Right now, in our case, it's not our indecision that strings Jesus up on a cross, but I think it does threaten the important parts of life that Jesus has called us to live. I think our indecision Whether we realize it or not, I think our indecision will make the decision for us in some of these important places in our life. Our indecision will make the decision for us. And I have a hunch that we won't always like where it is that we end up. Where life ends up, where faith ends up, where family ends up, where marriage ends up. When indecision is making the decision for us. So our goal then, this is what I want to suggest to you today. This is what I think we need to take from a story like this about the neutral indifference of a guy like Pilate. Our goal then, when we find ourselves confronted with Jesus, whether we asked for it or not, whether we saw it coming or not, our goal when we are confronted with Jesus and his invitation to us and his instruction for his life and his call on our life, our goal is to be as firm in our commitment to him as he is in his commitment to us. Regardless of how it is that Jesus, you know, comes into our sphere, our goal is to be as firm in our commitment to him as he is in his commitment to us. He stood with us all the way until death on a cross. And all too often, we stand with Jesus, right? I mean, we like who he is and you know what he's about, and we're not against him, right? But we stand with him only up until we encounter the slightest bit of inconvenience or of discomfort or opposition. We stand with him as long as the voices out here don't get too loud. So let me ask you then today, I mean, if this is true, that there's some part of us that's a whole lot like Pilate, let me ask you today, is there some place in your life that you sense Jesus is inviting you to take a stand with him? I mean, is there some decision that you kind of keep putting off? Is there some commitment that has been nagging and that you've kept contemplating? Is there some invitation on your life that you sense is from Jesus that you keep weighing but keep deferring as well? Is there some part of your life that you sense Jesus is inviting you to take a greater stand with him? If I'm honest with you about my life, I don't know, maybe this comes as a surprise to you, but if I'm honest with you, sometimes I feel like I need to take a stand more with Jesus, meaning I need to be more firm in my commitment to representing Jesus in my everyday life outside of church. See, there are times when I kind of realize that I'm the kind of guy that will preach boldly about Jesus in church on Sunday, and then I cross my fingers that the person sitting next to me on the airplane doesn't ask what I do for a living. Right? I mean, I always hear stories of pastors who love to strike up conversation with the person in the window seat about Jesus and his radical love for them, and I feel bad that that's not always me, or that's not my go-to reaction to the, whoever is sitting next to me, right? That's not always me. And it's not because I don't love Jesus. I do. It's not because I don't want everybody that I come in contact to understand the radical love that Jesus has for them and the invitation that he has for their life, right? I do. I gave up my entire life to serve him as best I could. But sometimes, just being honest with you, sometimes the voices of the world around me are so loud in what I feel like is in opposition to Jesus. Who wouldn't look favorably on a man who gave up his life to do it? This is just the voices I hear. I'm going, man, the voices are too loud, that it somehow I feel like it would be easier, just be more comfortable, just a lot better if I just didn't say anything at all. I'm not going to say anything bad. I'm just I don't know. I just try to nothing to see over here. And I just wonder where the same kind of thing, it's going to be different for all of us. I get that. It's absolutely going to be different for all of us. I just wonder where the same kind of thing is maybe true for you. Where the voices of the world around you, they're too loud, too overpowering, too confusing, right? I mean, I don't know, maybe right now you're maybe for the first time ever, or maybe you're just you're trying to, you know, recommit yourself to, you know, to building a life of biblical integrity, or you're trying to build a life of real God-honoring values and God-honoring morals and God-honoring principles in your life and in your work and in your family, right? But if you haven't noticed, right, that just gets harder and harder to do today. The voices of the world are growing louder and louder and louder, accusing you. If that's your goal, right? The voices get louder, accusing you of being old-fashioned or out of touch or outdated or, you know, downright weird, right? They're constantly calling for you to cave or to at least flex or to bend or to accommodate to whatever is the most popular sentiment at the moment. And too often, the louder voices prevail, right? You might be open to Jesus right now in your life, and you might even be intrigued by what it is that you're learning about him or hearing about him or, you know, experiencing about him, but the voices of the world around you tell you that that's not a great idea. It's not a very popular path to be walking right now. You might be trying to build a life of spiritual discipline, but the voices of the world around you are telling you that's too extreme. You might be trying to build a life of radical generosity, but the world around is telling you, like, you'll be missing out. You might be called right now or feeling called to live a life of sexual purity, but the voices of the world around you are telling you, it's kind of a thing of the past, man. The world's moving on. Ultimately, I don't know the life that you're living. I don't know the decisions that you are facing. It, you know, might be some of the ones that I mentioned. It might be something totally different. In fact, I suspect that it's probably a lot of different things for a lot of different people sitting in here today or tuning in online. I don't know what firm commitment. I don't know what a firm commitment to Jesus looks like for you in your life at home or your life at school, at work, or, you know, in the neighborhood or on the basketball court or the baseball field or in the conference room. I don't know. But I do know, whatever it is, I do know that it's a whole lot easier to be pretty indifferent. We can do so without ruffling a lot of feathers. I do know that it's a whole lot easier to remain pretty neutral about the whole deal, to deflect, to defer, to put off any decision as long as you can, right? You may not be against Jesus. I mean, heck, most of us, especially that are willing to sit here, we're pretty open, pretty interested to who Jesus is, right? But we might not be. You might not be. I may not always be as quick to stand with him where the rubber meets the road. And what we don't realize about those moments, what we don't realize is that ultimately our indecision in those moments is actually far more decisive than we think. And so I can't help but wonder what our world would look like, what your world would look like at home or at work or in the office or in your marriage and your family. I can't help but wonder what our world would look like if the loudest voices didn't always seem to cast the winning vote. Mid-Current, we could be, you and I, we here today, we could be the change that we want to see. And to do that, I'm not necessarily saying that we've, you know, do we have to shout any louder? But what I am saying is that we might just have to actually stand a little taller and stand a little more firm with the one who stood alongside of us all the way till the very end. You just have to decide where it is that you will take a stand. Let me pray. God, we give you thanks for this day, and God, we give you thanks for the stories in Scripture, God, that illuminate for us truth, God, that you might be calling us to. God, we even give you thanks for sometimes a bad example that teaches us a really good lesson, God. And from this story of Pilate, a guy who didn't mean to do any harm, God, we realize that our indecision, our indifference is sometimes costly, God. And so I'm just praying that you would help each of us here today, God, because it is going to be different for all of us. I pray that you would help each of us here today to know, to have a sense of where it is that you might be calling us to stand a little taller and to stand a little more firm alongside of you, alongside of your son, Jesus, who stood alongside of us, God, all the way to death on the cross. God, would you help us to stand firm when the rubber meets the road in a way that might make a difference in the world in which we live, God, in the places that we have influence around us every single day. God, help us, guide us, encourage us, and strengthen us to take a stand, to make a decision, God, to stand with you in the places that matter most. We give you thanks for this, and we pray all this in the name of your son, Jesus. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this week's message from Midcurrent Church. For more information and to visit us online, check out midcurrentchurch.org and find us on Facebook and Instagram. Follow us online during the week and visit us on Sunday mornings at 9 and 10:30 a.m. at 200 First Street in downtown Hudson.